If you're wondering how to navigate government or grow your business or even secure funding for your nonprofit, then this is the podcast for you. Here on Lobbying Insider, we take a look at the intersection between business and government and show how things actually get done. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Welcome to the program. And we are joined by two special guests today, the Honorable Keith Wright and Bianca Rajprasad. Good to have you both with us, both from DHC.
Pleasure to join you. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Figured we'd do a little post-State of the State analysis, take a look at the upcoming legislative session, what's going on politically, big year for the Democrats, you know, Governor Hochul running for re-election, second full term. Let's start with the speech. She was in Albany for the State of the State address. Speech was relatively short, I think, by some standards, at least as we've seen in past years. Touching on some themes, but it seemed to me nothing too controversial. It seems like, you know, going into the reelection, the message that she seems to want to send to the Democrats is we're all swimming in the same direction. Republicans in Washington are the ones we're running against, and, you know, notably Donald Trump. She has spent the last 2 years fighting with the legislature, and I didn't see anything easily identifiable as something she'd clash with them on this time around.
Oh, I thought that it was a very safe speech in many, many respects, and it was shorter. I remember I'm comparing it a bit to the year last year.
Yeah.
And I remember the last year's speech. What I don't remember much about the speech, but I remember it was more of an event.
Mm-hmm.
She had all of these different sort of entertaining sort of, I think a young girl sang the national anthem, like a 10-year-old girl, and you had somebody doing gymnastics. I don't know what it would.
Then those dancers, the Liberty dancers.
Right,
and then the conservative media make fun of her about
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Almost like they were the Nick City dancers or something.
Yeah,
like
I think
that.
It was Liberty dancers.
Yeah. Yes, Liberty. Absolutely. So, but this year's speech, I thought played it very safe. She's an absolute master in terms of the way she navigates political waters. I find. Mm-hmm. Listen, she's got a mayor who is decidedly to the left of her, and I thought her speech hit all of the benchmarks that he wanted to hear. I thought she played it very safe with the legislature. You don't in an election year, you don't want to go into having fights with the legislature. I think that's probably where Eric Adams made his mistake. And I thought that she... She hit all the themes and such, and she did not do herself any harm whatsoever. I think she played to the upstate audiences well when talking about nuclear power and such, which is a kind of a controversial subject matter down here in the city. She was talking about congestion pricing, and basically she wore that well.
It took a victory lap.
It took
on that
a
one.
Victory lap, mm-hmm. Right, with congestion pricing. So I thought it was a very safe speech, and I thought she hit it well, and she didn't do herself any harm.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the prime focus and the main focus was affordability, public safety, safe talking points. I think the universal child care proposal that she's putting out there obviously aligns with what Mayor Mamdani was pushing during his campaign. So it looks like they came to a common ground on that issue. And you heard from the room the raving applause on that topic. So that should be something that I think both sides could agree on, Republicans and Democrats. And I think she threw a little shade to the Republicans, too. Like, you could stand. Republicans have children, too. And
she made
a good few jokes during the speech, which I thought was really showed her personality, you know, down to like holding social media companies accountable, mm-hmm. you know, making sure that we're transparent on AI campaigns. And I love the little poster that she put up of her with the military outfit on. Some Long Island members were like, you know what, that would actually play well.
Oh, the Rambo image where she's holding the machine gun.
Yes.
They were like, that image alone could probably get her some votes in Long Island.
So. That's right.
So she played it well. So I think her team did a really good job putting that together.
I think you're right. Also, she really did kind of find the common ground with Mayor Mamdani, who's brand new, who's the kind of rock star of the party. You know, she doesn't want to alienate him or his supporters who came out in droves to vote for him in the mayoral election, you know, not 2 months ago. But there was one notable exception, I thought, in the sense that she did not mention new taxes. You know, Mamdani is talking about how we need to tax the rich. There needs to be a dedicated tax even to do child care. She seemed to at least leave the door open to not doing any new taxes at all.
She didn't kill it, but she didn't suggest it either. What I thought was also a unifying force in terms of helping folks rally around her when she was talking about ICE and the and the Trump administration. Everybody stood up for that. The first to stand up was Jumaane Williams. I saw him from the crowd, and she knew when to call the chorus in when she needed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly red meat for the Democratic Party, a largely Democratic audience. But I guess, you know, is it possible they could do this health care thing or child care in particular and maybe wait a year to do the taxes, right, until she's either safely reelected or they revisit it? I know she doesn't want to do the personal income tax, but has left the door open to corporate taxes going up.
And I think that's what she's looking at. I mean, I heard her on New York One, I guess, last night when she says, I'm not saying no. I'm just not saying not now.
Right.
That's usually what happens with controversial topics. They do it on an off-cycle year when it's a non-election year. And that's, just get her through the door now this year. And then next year, it could be a talking point that they work on together with the mayor.
Tricky. Listen,
the mayor doesn't want to have all of his victories in the first 6 weeks.
No.
That's true also. Yeah. Right. No. But it's always tricky when you're running statewide, new taxes may be real fodder for the progressive left in the city base, but it's not for the suburbs and upstate. That's actually the last thing they want to hear, right? Mm-hmm. So she's got to walk that balance. And I think in terms of pressure from Mamdani, and what we can talk more about this, because I think it's a really interesting dynamic, is that there's this almost obsession on the progressive left with raising taxes on the rich. It's almost like a victory they want to notch. Meanwhile, sometimes you have a conversation after the fact, and it's like, well, where did that money go? Mm-hmm. Is anybody's life markedly improved because of that, or does it go to the general fund? And there's no accountability for it. It feels like there's a little bit of that going on just when she was at the Mamdani rally late in the election cycle last year, and they're screaming, chanting at her, tax the rich, tax the rich. It's almost like something they need to hear from her in order to support her. And it's tricky politically, right?
Oh, no, it's a rallying cry. And she, I don't think she was booed, but I mean,
they kind of made clear over her that they want to hear that from her don't want to hear anything
else. That's right. And it is a tricky subject, especially when you have to remember, Kathy Hochul is she's from the suburban Buffalo. She's from the suburbs of Buffalo. They just think differently than a lot of folks think.
Conservative by nature. Conservative. And I don't say that pejoratively. Democrats there are not quite, the commie corridor, as they call it here in New York City, where everybody's living in Queens.
That's right.
A lot of people moving into the city, young people, for example.
But I think she's handling it well. Mamdani did not seem to be upset.
he praised her afterwards.
Yeah, he did not seem to be upset. So I think she's playing it well.
Yeah, it's a tough balance for sure, right?
Yep. But I think that, again, she has a good relationship with the sitting mayor right now. They definitely had a conversation of, here are the one or two wins I could give you this year. Overall, this is going to be my agenda, and we'll revisit the topics come time the new year. And again, like you said, Mamdani probably doesn't have the mindset of, I need all my wins to be checked off in 1 year, right? Like, let that flow out and roll out for the next 3 years now, going into his election season.
I would argue he needs a win in this first session.
No question.
Which is
universal
childcare.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
No question.
Right.
Especially in that budget. In the budget.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be multiple. It doesn't. But he's got to come back with something. Mm-hmm.
Well, and she does give her budget address. When is the budget address? Sometime in
January. It'll be this month,
Sometime in January, maybe a week or two from now. And that's where that's really where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
You'll know what her agenda is in terms of where you spend your money. Where you spend your money is a telltale sign of what you're all about. So once she does her budget presentation, we'll get the real meat and potatoes as to where she, or the blueprint as to where she wants to go legislatively. And And policy-wise.
We are taping, by the way, after the State of the State, but before the budget address. Mm-hmm. So for listeners who are tuning in a little bit later, they'll see where we were in terms of the moment in time. A couple other things in the speech I did want to highlight that, you know, some of which were interesting and I think, you know, hit a nerve with audiences, others where I was a little more, okay, that's it, you know, like auto insurance, for example. You know, I mean, it's... You know, it's one of those things. I you know, for drivers, it's not for city people as much, right?
Right, and I think that welcomes the balance of this is an issue that maybe a lot of upstate New Yorkers have to deal with. People on Staten Island, I always put my Staten Island plug in, are dealing with, right? And I think the fact that that's like a component of addressing affordability in this state, right? Like putting money back in people's pockets. Even the topic of holding utility companies accountable and, you know, with these rate hikes that are happening right now and her saying we're going to address it and hold them to the fire on this, and they shouldn't be able to, you know, hike up, you know, rates as high as they are. And they need to look at it as a state. That alone right now, I think that's, you know, people are looking at their Con Edison bills right now and seeing, you know, their bills tripling, doubling. And the fact that she's saying, I'm going to take this on head first, I think will resonate with New Yorkers across the board. But again, it goes back into that affordability agenda, getting money back into people's pockets. So if she's able to be successful in some way, somehow, addressing both issues, I think you get both the moderates and the socialists, in a sense, who are affected by this.
You always want an elected official to speak to you,
mm-hmm.
As to what's concerning you. Auto insurance speaks to a large amount of people. Utility bills speaks to a large amount of people. And quite frankly, when you're talking about the affordability or the lack of affordability of both auto insurance and utilities, those are bread and butter issues.
Yeah.
It's bread and butter.
Right.
That's what everybody, it goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It was a very safe speech, and she touched on all the focal points that I think that people are concerned with.
In terms of energy, I think it's very indisputable that bills are going up, that mm-hmm. we're seeing this. Critics would say it's a result of policies the last several years that are moving us more towards renewable energies that are more expensive to put into the grid. And, you know, I know we are, you know, taking wind farm energy down from Canada and they need to build out the infrastructure to do that. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation. I don't have the evidence in this podcast to prove it one way or the other, but I will say it does feel like energy bills are skyrocketing.
Feel like? I saw my bill this month. Oh, and I felt that.
Yeah. What you talking about, Willis?
Right, what you talking about? Feels like my bill was like at
least
trying
to be
double.
Objective here.
No, there's no objective in this one.
I don't want to put my thumb on the scale here, but, you know.
No.
It's real.
It's real.
Yeah, yeah.
It's real. And everyone is feeling it, you know, from low-income families to those who are in the 1%, I'm assuming, right? Whether it's their businesses or their residencies. So, yeah, no, I think that's I get the logic that you're presenting behind it, but I think when people are now, it's already expensive to live in the city, so it's expensive to live in New York in general, and then you're telling people that they have to pay double their utility costs now just to survive in this city, and people are trying to, like, live paycheck to paycheck and make ends meet. It's just not reasonable. And I think for the governor to take that on heads first, I think that's commendable.
Yeah. I mean, something needs to be done there. And
have you seen the prices to live in Manhattan right now? It's gone up. Like, I don't know how or much it's gone up, but I think the cost of an average apartment, I think I read it was like $3,800 a month.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Well, and then you do something like groceries, right? Where everybody can agree the prices of groceries have gone sky high. Mm-hmm. And what do you do about something like that? Well, there's one school of thought where you bring in more competition, more of the big box places that can sell them at a more affordable rate. But then that kind of pushes out small businesses, right? So that's it leads to a whole other problem, you know? And I don't know how you thread that needle. Mamdani, for example, talked about having publicly run
groceries.
You know, I maybe there's a way to do that. It sounds enormously complicated to me. So, you know, those are the types of issues that, you know, they can probably find together to work on. But certainly I think there's widespread agreement that energy bills need to be addressed.
100%.
Yeah.
I feel triggered right now.
What do you do about that? Right. So, and on that theme, I mean, she did seem to take some cues from him, Donnie, right? I mean, it does seem like, you know, that whatever it was that he was selling regarding affordability really did resonate. People absolutely grabbed onto it. You could even make the argument Trump made some of the same arguments in 2024 when he was talking about, you know, the types of issues like affordability and appealing to people on that. He had a very different approach, right? than Mom Donnie. But the populist message of economic insecurity was a strong one that resonates across both parties, right?
No question. I mean, the populist messages are always good, and it doesn't always work with everyone. However, I mean, Mom Donnie has a way of communicating, and he speaks to a certain segment, and... the governor speaks to a certain segment. So, and as I said, people just want to make sure that that box is being checked.
Yeah. Right. And in terms of Mamdani and his affordability agenda, do you think that he's going to push more for other aspects of it, or do you think he'll be satisfied with childcare and that'll be enough? That'll be enough to deliver.
No, I think he's definitely going to try to push for an expansion of the free bus pilot program that he was able to secure for his district. I could see him trying to push for other boroughs to be included in that. So whether it's like a line in each borough, I don't know how successful it was in Queens. I never looked at the numbers, but I could definitely see him trying to push that. And I know the unions are concerned about that too.
Right. No, it gets really tricky with free buses. And also the MTA's claiming poverty, right? Yes. I mean, that was part of the reason we implemented
congestion pricing.
That's why they're cracking down on fares, you know, so...
Congestion pricing.
Yeah, I know you don't like congestion pricing, right?
I don't like congestion pricing.
It doesn't quite bother me.
Well, it's funny, right? And I've made a point of not driving into Lower Manhattan, since that happened. But, you know, there is something to be said for the fact, because I know we talked about this on this podcast before it really went into effect, that, you know, very often these tolls, which is basically what it is, you know, are very unpopular until you do them and then people stop making it their number one concern, right? They just get used to it. You know, tolls, everything is always going up anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not, like, I don't hear the same...
uproar.
Right?
No.
I mean, it's not quite what it was.
Not like we did last year.
No. Yeah.
So, totally different.
We'll see if Republicans try to run on it in the suburbs. You know, I think they might. I don't know that it has the kind of traction it did before it actually went into effect.
Totally agree.
So what do we see in terms of the race? So the governor has a primary, right? It's her sitting lieutenant governor, Antonio Delgado, who's challenging her. Why he made that choice, I don't totally know. Maybe either one of you has some insight into that. But he was in a pretty good position. He got plucked out of a congressional seat. Where he was very successful in a swing district, right?
In a 96% white district as well.
Right. And now he is going to challenge the governor. What is your sense of whether or not he has any prospects for success or even what might have driven a decision like that?
I don't know. And I've spoken to him and I think he conveyed to me that he was upset that the governor never really included him or spoke to him in terms of various pieces of subject matter that were important or just even mundane. Now, that being said, I mean, he was a member of Congress, and I think everybody knows that once you become a lieutenant governor, you become probably the most obscure person on earth. No one will know your name.
You're on the ribbon cutting express.
You're cutting ribbons all over town. You're on the road. Now, Kathy Hochul, when she was lieutenant governor, she did that quite well. Mm-hmm. Now, whether she complained or not, I don't know. But Delgado apparently, as I said, he was a sitting member of Congress. And then I don't know if he thought that this would launch him into becoming governor or United States Senator or what. I don't know. I don't know his mindset, but he took the job.
Yeah.
He took the job, and I guess he didn't like it.
Right.
So now he's running against her. I don't think he has a chance. Mm-hmm. Nice guy, wrong time, in many respects. So I don't even know if he was at the speech or not. I just don't know. I know he's been moving around locally.
He presided over the Senate.
He did preside over the Senate, yeah. But I don't know if he was at the speech.
Yeah.
But and I don't think so, because otherwise that would have taken on a whole different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But he's moving around. I don't know where he's getting his money from, but he's still officially the lieutenant governor, so he's allowed to move around.
Right.
Whether he has any duties or not, I don't know. I don't think so.
She did take away a lot of his staff and his ability to kind of function in that job.
That's right.
And what's your sense? I mean, do you think that he's, going to be successful? Is he going to be able to tap in, for example, to that Mamdani base? I mean, I know he's flirted with it. Mm-hmm. I know they've flirted with him.
Mm-hmm.
More to me to put pressure on the governor than anything else, like whether or not they're going to show up for him in the same enthusiastic numbers. I think that's a really tall order.
It is. And already there have been some DSA members who have publicly endorsed him, like Senator Jabari Brisport. I don't know if the DSA itself has endorsed him yet. I'm assuming they probably are going to go down that road, but I don't think...
And actually endorse him, in other
words. Yeah, and endorse him.
Yeah.
They may. I don't know.
Just because they're endorsing challengers everywhere. They're right. Emboldened by Mamdani's win.
Right.
Why not,
Unless Mamdani, I guess, and again, this goes back to seeing if politically, like if he says, listen, leave the governor alone and don't endorse in this race, as he did in the Hakeem Jeffries race, he may do that as well and say, this is a partner of mine. She's giving us X, Y, and Z and wins. And why are we going to challenge her in the first year? And maybe in, 4 years, let's revisit the conversation, right? Mamdani may do that, right? So I think it all depends on where he stands, because technically right now he's the face and leader of their, I guess, caucus of the Democratic Party. So I think if he says, I'm, 100% behind the governor, I think the DSA falls in line with what he wants. And I don't think he publicly endorsed anyone yet. I think he had an interview recently. He said he hasn't had a conversation with the governor, or she hasn't asked officially for his endorsement. So you never know how that's going
to
go.
DSA, the Democratic Socialist America, used to be more choosy about the races, but now it seems like with the Mamdani victory, there are challengers everywhere.
Yeah, they're firing on all cylinders. No, but it's, you have to remember, though, the mayor, the city of New York, is a subsidiary of the state of New York.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor, whoever that is, always needs the governor.
Right.
Always needs the governor. I mean, every year, you'll see the mayor going up to the legislature. They call it the Tin Cup Monday.
Tin Cup Day, mm-hmm.
Tin Cup
right.
Day,
right.
Where he's looking for money for everything.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't behoove Mamdani to be upset with the governor, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't behoove the governor to be upset with him. So they have, so far I've seen a good working mm-hmm. relationship. But the DSA folks, the Democratic Socialists of America, they feel emboldened. They're mm-hmm. they're running races all over the place. Once you get a taste of it, now they're trying to. Now, how successful they will be, I don't know.
Yeah,
and the city definitely needs money from the state for everything.
No question.
And they also
everything.
Need their permission, right? I
Absolutely.
Mean, it's like even if Mamdani's running on something like raising taxes,
that's right.
You cannot do that
right.
without an act from the legislature,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
right?
I mean,
that's right.
I think the property tax is that's something right. that the city has more control yes. over. But that's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. It requires an assessment, and it's
right.
a years long process.
Right.
But even if you want to raise the sales tax by half a cent,
Albany,
right?
They have the say
Albany.
So that I think to your point, puts the mayor in a position where they
yeah.
cannot afford
yeah.
to alienate the governor of the same party if they want to do anything.
That's right. Right. Well, you remember the fights that De Blasio had with Cuomo were
yeah.
classic.
Yeah,
were absolute classic.
Right. So. And De Blasio ended up spinning his wheels a lot because
right.
Cuomo kind of did the universal pre-K thing for him, then didn't really understand that he should just take credit for it, right? And he kind of kept pushing for the tax, and it just led to some very bad blood, and
exactly.
they did not work together at all very
not
well.
At all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for
well.
Two successive administrations
That's
of,
right.
of the mayor. Mm-hmm. Getting close to time here, but I did want to ask about the Republicans. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, a close ally of Trump, was supposed to run in the Republican race. She decided to drop out. Curious if you had any insight into that and whether Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County executive, has more of a chance or less of a chance than she would have had.
I don't know what happened with that. Certainly, I don't think Stefanik wanted to go through a bruising primary with Blakeman, and I don't think she liked what she heard from the president when someone asked him the question, who do you like, Blakeman or Stefanik? And he said, they're both fine people, or whatever the hell they are.
That's right. She didn't like that at all.
No. Yeah, I don't think she liked that at all. Meanwhile, she's been holding his water, the president's water, all throughout Congress and various issues. But I guess Blakeman goes back with Trump for many, many years. I think that Stefanik probably would have had a better shot against Hochul, you know, woman against woman.
I agree.
Blakeman, I just don't know.
He doesn't excite the base,
doesn't excite, right. Doesn't excite.
Did well in his race. He just was elected Nassau County executive. He was reelected. He did very well. It was one bright spot for Republicans, but the whole state is not Nassau County.
Right.
And I don't think not many people know who he is outside of Nassau or Suffolk County.
Stefanik at least had a fervent following on the right. And the people, Conservative Party, for example, would have showed up and voted for her. I don't think it's enough votes to beat someone like Kathy Hochul, but there was an enthusiasm that he may lack.
Yeah, no, she could have definitely excited the base on the right. She's young, you know, in a sense, politically. I think she articulates herself in a way where people were listening to her and saw her as someone that could have been competitive against the governor. I do, at the end of the day, I think if Governor Hochul ran against her, I think the governor would have came up on top either way. But I think it would have been a more competitive race if Stefanik was in the race. I think Bruce is... It's going to be a challenge because obviously all he's going to do is attack the governor on everything that she does, and she has to be able to dilute whatever he's putting out in the public. But I think she should be fine at the end of the day, unless something explodes.
Yeah, Blakeman's a guy, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I used to hear his name because he used to run for everything.
He ran for everything, right. He was like Tom Golisano.
Yeah, he ran for everything. So, and I think he probably lucked up in this race. And he's very happy and very giddy. And, you know, now he wants more. He wants to run for governor. But got to remember, it's a free shot for him. He does not.
He doesn't have to give up his position.
He does not give up his Nassau County executive position. So.
Right. So that makes it easier.
So why not? Yeah. If he can raise the necessarily $20, $30 million, why not?
And I think Stefanik was very frustrated by the president's lack of support. Not only what you were talking about regarding him not choosing a horse in the race, but also his kind of love fest with Mamdani, right? I mean, Mamdani came down to the White House and the two of them are you know, thick as thieves. And she was planning on running against the Democratic Socialist agenda and associating Hochul with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump kind of burst that bubble.
No, he was speaking about how great Mamdani is and he's going to do great work and we're going to support New York and make sure that he doesn't fail. And that just kind of kiboshed her whole platform
You never know with Trump, huh?
Just
when you think you have him pegged, you know, he shows us something else.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, very predictable. Okay. That was great. We'll leave it here. Thanks to both of you, Bianca, Keith.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Lobbying Insider podcast is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York State's premier middle market law firm, practicing in more than 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and government affairs. The podcast is produced by Don Tesserero, and our platform manager is Monica Thomas. Be sure to subscribe, and you can get it where you get most podcasts, including Apple, Audible, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thanks for being with us.